Go. Yeah. But they don't know. So the I would like to introduce you to somebody by the name of Howard Moskowitz. Have you ever heard of Howard Moskowitz? Do we know? So Howard Moskowitz happens to be a descendant of the Chozumi Lublin, right here in the article. However, we're not going to be discussing the Chozumi Lublin. We're going to be talking about his descendant. So his descendant lived in America, and he was provided with the following question. They just discovered aspartame, and Pepsi was trying to figure out what is the right amount of aspartame to put in our diet soda. We knew that the amount of sweetness, I don't know what this means exactly, is someplace between 8 and 12%. And it's going to be someplace there, and we're going to try to figure out what it's going to be. So they hire him. He's some kind of food expert, and he takes a sample. He gives out different ones, 8%, 8.5%, 9%, right? And he does a survey. And the survey says he doesn't know what to make of it. There's dots all over the map, right? He can't grade it. He can't figure out a pattern into how it's graded, and he can't figure out which is the right percentage then to use for Diet Pepsi. So with that, we will then head into the show. So how did Howard Moskowitz deal with it, or what did he recognize? So with that, let's learn a little bit, and then we'll go back to Howard Moskowitz shortly. Okay, so we have it's entitled The Challenge to Jewish Unity. How can both sides be correct? So this is like a big problem. Like, we learn, and we've actually spent at least five shirim between Mincha and Maribs over the past 5 years trying to figure out these kinds of questions, right? The idea of Lo Bashamayim Hi, right? That's right. Or the idea that there's Machokas, the concept of Eilu Ve'ilu Divrilukim Chayim. And we like learn about it, and it's like, okay, what do I do with that? So we're going to learn about it again and maybe figure out a little bit more about what to do with it, even though we might not necessarily conclude that we really know how to deal with it. And that's probably okay. That's probably what's supposed to be. Okay, so there is a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos that says as follows, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Chosva Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, right? The seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes, right? Emes defines God. Emes is truth, right? Truth, and there's only a truth, right? It's hard to have two truths that contradict each other, so it seems like we're looking for Emes. On the other hand, we have the following Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, and there's many Gemaras that we could have put down here, but this is a good one because it's got a few good stories attached to it. So, V'amar Rabbi Yila Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Mutter Lo La'adam L'shanos B'davar HaShalom. It is permissible for a person to, L'shanos means to change, or to, we'll call it, lie, right? Mishum B'davar Shalom, in order for the sake of peace. How do we know that? Sh'ne'emar Avicha Tziva, right? And what is the rest of that pasuk? So that's after Yaakov dies. Yosef's brothers are all afraid that now Yosef's going to turn on them and take his revenge once and for all now that Yaakov's dead, right? So they turn around to Yosef and say, by the way, Yosef, before you do anything to us, you should just know that our father told us that before we die, you shouldn't do anything to us, right? So they know no such thing ever happened. So the Gemara says, why did they do that? Mishum Shalom, in order to maintain peace, so they lie to some, they fudge something about what their father probably didn't ever say, right? Or at least according to the Gemara didn't say, and lied about it in order to maintain Shalom, right? And Yosef gets all insulted. I can't believe you would have thought that. Fine. But that's example number one. Rabbi Nassan Omer Mitzvah. Rabbi Nassan says that it is a mitzvah to lie for the sake of peace. How do we know that? So that is a story in the beginning of Shmuel, right, where David is supposed to go someplace in order to be anointed by Shmuel. So by Yomer Shmuel, he says, Shmuel, how can I go? David says, how can I go? Shmuel, Shaul is going to hear about me going, and they're going to ask me, I'm going to be stopped by the customs officers, they're going to ask me where I'm going, and I'm going to say, well, I'm going to be anointed as king. Oops, I probably shouldn't have said that. Oh, right? So what am I going to tell them? Right? They're wondering what I'm doing. So Shmuel gives them an eitzah, all right, take this goat, and you'll tell them that you're not going, you're going to tell them, listen, don't think I'm going to be anointed as king, I'm bringing this goat in order to bring a korban, right? That will make sure that it's covered up and nobody will ever suspect the thing. So what is Shmuel telling him to do, though? Shmuel is telling him to lie, right? Lie in order to maintain peace. Now, unfortunately, they're all asking, really could ask on the first proof also, that's a case of life and death, right? That, okay, so there is ways of people will come up with ways of dealing with that. But the Gemara at least says that we see here it's a mitzvah to lie. And the Vei Rebbe Yishmael, Tana Gadol,
under these kinds of,
for the sake of peace. That's what the Gemara is, that's right. The Gemara's language.
Right.
So the Gemara doesn't say in order to save your neck. That's not what the Gemara said. The Gemara said you're allowed to lie for the sake of peace. Right? And then the Gemara.
Can these, if he actually is saying he's going to bring a korban, he actually brings a korban, can we say he's going to lie?
Does he actually bring a korban? He probably does bring a korban at the end. Okay.
So he's not lying.
Okay. That's a question on the proof. That's not a question on the statement of the Gemara. The Gemara makes a statement, you're allowed to lie for the sake of peace. And then the Gemara says, if you lie for the sake of peace, don't worry, you're in good company. Shabbat Kaddish Baruch Hu shown it. Was even a Kaddish Baruch Hu lied for the sake of peace. Now this is probably the best proof, because there's no life and death situations going on here. What's the proof? The Meikara Ksiv Vaduniza Kain Ubusov Kesiv Vaniza Kanti. Right in the beginning, what are we talking about? So this is the story where the Malach comes to Sarah and tells him, Malachim come to Sarah and Avram and tell them you're going to have a child. So first they go to Sarah. Sarah says, how are we going to possibly have a child? That's the craziest thing I ever heard. My husband is so old. Right? So then they go to Avram and tell Avram you're going to have a child. What does Avram say? What did my wife say? So they say to him, your wife, she said that she's very old. Right? So they lied. Right? That's not really what their wife said, but that's not really what Sarah said, but they did it in order to maintain peace. Right? So here we see that Shalom is much more important, or at least seems that Shalom is more important than Emes. Right? So how do we deal with the conflict of Emes and Shalom? And how do we deal with many conflicts? So specifically that conflict is probably a different shear, but how do we deal with conflict in general? So there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and this I remember bothering me for a long time, how to deal with this Gemara. So Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, when I learned Sanhedrin, I was like, how do you deal with this? So Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yosef Aglili said, Asur livtsoa v'chol ha-betsoa reizachote. What does it mean to be betsoa? So betsoa means that you are compromising, right? So he says it is prohibited to compromise, right? You go to a Din Torah, Shlomi says that you owe me $500, right? And Beryl says you owe me, I owe you nothing, right? So there's a din, right? There's a halacha. The halacha is, right, that he's kofer bakol, he denies everything, he owes nothing, right? Nothing. That's the halacha. So the Gemara says that the judge maintains the prerogative, assuming both sides agree beforehand, that instead of going straight din, we're going to go compromise. In fact, if you go to a din Torah today, pretty much any din Torah, right? They will say this right in the beginning of the din Torah, right? Generally speaking, there is a din, and then there is a compromise, right? And we maintain, and most bati din, at least most bati din that we would deal with, even though I was supposed to deal with bati din, but most of them go by something that's called pshara karov l'din, that we do something called a compromise that's kind of approximates the halacha, but we're not going to figure out the exact halacha, we're going to follow pshara, we're going to follow what's called a compromise, right? So how are you allowed to do that, right? You're there's a halacha, we have to follow the halacha. How can you compromise? Right? How does that work? So that's what Rabbi Yezir ben Osher, Rabbi Yezir Glee said, you're not allowed to, right? V'chol ha-butzeh reiz ha-chota, you're sinning, right? You're copping out. Right? V'chol ha-mevarit es ha-butzeh reiz ha-menayitz. And if you bless the butzeh, if you bless the person that compromises, so you're like, you're blaspheming. You're not allowed to do that. V'alzeh ne'mar butzeh ha-barich no'etz Hashem. Right, and that's what it said. Right, one who praises a compromiser has blasphemed Hashem. I should look up what that pasuk is exactly referring to. I feel like it's not referring to a court case, but you know, like compromise. Right, that's the proof text that they bring. Ella, rather, yikuv adin esahar. Let the halacha move the mountain. Halacha rules. Right, forget any type of compromise. Comes the other opinion. However, ki mishpat elokim hu, right? Because the mishpat, the judgment belongs to Hashem. V'chein Moshe haya omer yikov adin esar. And that was actually, if you want someone to back up that opinion, that was how Moshe Rabbeinu held. Moshe Rabbeinu held yikov adin esar. Aval Aaron, however, oiv shalom v'rodiv shalom. Always loved peace and sought peace. U'meisim shalom bin adam l'chavero, and made peace between man and his friend. Shemar Torah emes haisa b'fihu, right? That the true Torah was in his mouth, the avla lunimsa bisfasav, and a sin was not found on his lips. Right, b'shalom uvemishar halach oti v'rabim yishiv me'avon. Right, he went with straightness and peace, and he was able to keep people away from sin. Right, implying what? And who's the hero of the story in the Moshe versus Aaron debate? Right, so the Gemara seems to be playing up Aaron. Right, so Aaron's the hero. Right, so how'd that happen? Right, Yikov had dinas Aar. Right, the halacha is the halacha is the halacha. Right, how can you say, well, you know, in order to maintain peace, instead of we're saying Shlomo will pay nothing, pay a little bit, pay his court costs, you know, do something. Right, so how do you? So how can we deal with that? Isn't that stealing then for the other person? So not only that, but the Gemara continues on and says, "Rabbi Shuvan Karcha Omer Mitzvah Livtzo." It is actually a mitzvah. It is a good deed to do compromise. Shenemar Emes Umishpat Shalom Shifto B'Shar Reifem. That truth and judgment, shalom and peace, should judge in your gates. Meaning shalom is part of the equation. V'alo b'makom sheyesh mishpat ein shalom. Aye, but when there is judgment, there is no peace. And when there is v'makom sheyesh shalom ein mishpat, and if there's peace, that means everybody's just getting along, and that means that there's no law. That means that there's no rules, right? So Ela Ezu Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom. How can you combine the two, that there be peace and that there be judgment? So that's what we call Bitzua. That's what we call compromise, right? Compromise does not mean Alpi Halacha. It doesn't mean, oh, well, he says he owes 500, he says he owes nothing, all right, we'll cut it down the middle, right? Compromise does not mean you're cutting it down the middle. Compromise means that we're taking other factors into account. We're taking how much they need the money. We might take into account how much you know, we should need a widow. We might take into account whether it's really worth it for us to figure out to the exact cent how much you're owed, or should we just round it up and that will save everybody some time, right? Or that will get him to agree, right? There's other things that could factor into the equation, right? And all of those are there in order to maintain. Shalom. But like, so I learned this Gemara, I remember, and I was still, okay, but why? Why? Just with Shalom, right? The law is not a lot. Like, how could we do that? How could there be, in the, so to speak, more than one right answer? Right? The halakhic answer and the Shalom answer. How does that work? What are we supposed to do? So this is taken to a further step when one discusses the halacha itself. I mean, not just, this is judging between people, and we could say, all right, people can agree, meaning people can make any type of tenai, any type of condition when they establish parameters in how they're going to conduct business. Right? So, okay. When we learn Gemara, we can say, well, money's always different, right? There's this thing called Hefker, Beis, and Hefker, which is a really nifty trick, which means that Beis Din can kind of move money around as they see fit, right? There's other rules that we have that are activated when it comes to money. Okay, but what about halacha? Right? Halacha, does it mean that there's a compromise in halacha? How does that work? So, the Gemara, the famous Gemara in Maseches Erevin, Mar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel. This is after several dafim of figuring out machlokasim between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and it says Shalosh Shanim Nechdu Beis Shammai Beis Hillel Halalu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu Halalu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu. There are 3 years that Beis Shammai Beis Hillel argued with one another. Each one said the halacha is like us. Right, and they're arguing, and they're fighting, and they're bringing proofs, and they're all that kind of thing. Finally, Yatza Baskol V'Amra, a Baskol comes out, heavenly voice comes out, and says famous words: Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Right, both of them are this and that are the words of the living God. However, V'Halacha K'Beis Hillel. Right, but we pass in like Beis Hillel, right? So just that itself is a contradiction, right? I have a gufa kasha, right? What's going on here? But what are we saying? We're saying that Elu. So, but you know, let's continue on a little bit. The Chimei Achar, by the way, she'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. He says, well, okay, well, once you assume that they both are true, that there is a correct approach both found within Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, mifnima zachu Beis Hillel likvo halacha kamosan. Why did Beis Hillel merit that we pass them like Beis Hillel? Why did they win the vote then? Or I don't know if it's the vote or the contest or the whatever. So if shenochin va'luvim hayu v'shonen divreihem v'divrei Beis Shammai. So the translation goes, because they were kind and modest, they studied their own rulings and those of Beis Shammai. Because they gave Beis Shammai the time of day, because they gave Beis Shammai some respect, right? So therefore they end up being the winners. Right? Below Ode, not only that, Elishamak Dimandir Beis Shammai Ledivrayim. But they even said Beis Shammai's Shita first. Now, often that's a good method to get, you know, to for you to prove yourself right, but that doesn't seem to be where the Gemara is going. The Gemara just seems like, they gave the Shammai respect, right? And that itself is a pretty good lesson for this time of year. But you're still stuck. What does that mean? What does it mean that this and that are correct? Right? How could it be that both this and that are correct? So there is a strand. There is a strand that will say, well, they're just making Bishamai feel better. That there really is only one that is correct. You might have, right? But, you know, and we have to pass from the best of our ability if we're wrong. So we're wrong. We made a mistake. Right? But I think the standard explanation, at least from the 12th century and on, is represented here in the Ritva. So what does the Ritva say? So the French Rabbanim asks, so if the Ritva is quoting Rabbani Tsarfas, know who is he quoting? Tosos. He's quoting Rashi's descendants. Sorry, Rabbeinu Tsarfas is referring to Tosos, which is interesting, just in its own right, because the Ritva is not living in France. The Ritva is living in Spain. He is living at a time, however. Ritva is a Talmud of the Ramban, right? I guess a contemporary of the Rashba, the Rush, right? The Rush is the one who came, so in a way he's the tail end of the Bali Tosos, and because the Jews are being thrown out of France, and because the Jews are being thrown out of Germany, right? So a lot of Jews are probably winding their way into Spain, and Ritva gets a hold of some of the writings of the Rabbeinu Tsarfat of Tosfos, so we see that it is intermingling, and this is probably the, even though it's found in the Bali Tosfos down the line, this is like the most famous because the Ritva is actually what people learn in yeshivas. So the Ritva quotes from the Bali Tosfos and says, "Heyach efshar shehu shneim devarim elukim chayim v'zeh osur v'zeh matir." How is it possible that there will be two divrei elukim chayim, and one will hold its asur and one will hold its mutter? I mean, how could you say it's correct? Person A saying mutter and person B saying asur, and they're both right. Right? How could that be? Right, that's the Ritva's kasha. Right? I think that's everybody's question. How could that be? So v'tirtzu. So how? What do they answer? Kesha'ala Moshe l'marom, when Moshe went up to the heights, l'kabel Torah herulo al kol davar v'davar, to receive the Torah, they showed him everything, every idea. Mem tes panim l'iser. 49 perspectives on why it would be usher, and 49 perspectives on why it would be mutter. V'shalach Hashbaruch Hu zeh, right? And if we're having a problem understanding how it could be mutter and usher, don't worry, we're in the same boat. Moshe Rabbeinu had the same kasha, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what I said. He asked Hashem, right? How could this be, right? And remember, this is Moshe Yikuv Hadin Sahar Moshe, right? Moshe is the guy, he's the halachicist. He says, how could it can't be compromised, right? He's the one who represents Din and all those kinds of things, right? So you see, even though he asked Hashem, and Hashem, we'll see what Hashem answers, right? Moshe wasn't necessarily convinced, right? Because he still continues to argue with Aaron, right? Throughout. That's what it seems like from that Gemara earlier. So Shalakash Baruch Hu zeh. So he asks Hashem, "Nu, how could this be?" Right? But Amar Shiheze Masul Chachmei Yisrael, that this is being passed over to the Chachmei Yisrael. Shevachol Dover Dor V'Yeh Hachra Kamosam. Right? In every generation, and they're going, and we're going to pass them like that. V'Nachum Lefi Hadrash Uvederach Emes Yishtam V'Sod V'Davar. He says, and that is the correct way how they explained it. And there is a sod v'davar. What does it mean that there is a sod? What does the word sod mean? Secret. Right? Did you hear? I heard a pshat from Rabbi David Aaron on what it means that something is a secret. What do you mean a secret? I just told you. Right? What does it mean when there's a secret?
Can't understand it.
And you need to experience it. That was his pshat. Doesn't mean that you can't. We say it over, right? There's a lot of things. A secret about Maisa Bereishis. There's a secret about Maisa Merkava, about the angels and what the throne of Hashem looks like, and all that kind of stuff. So that's a sod. What do you mean it's a sod? It's Beferish Prakim in Yirmiyah, right? Or not in Yirmiyah. In Yecheskel and in Yeshaya, right? What do you mean? What's the big secret? No. You don't get it until you experience it. You have to experience it. Understanding Hashem, right, is a secret because you have to experience it to really grasp what it means to have a relationship with Hashem. Okay, so what is the Ritva saying? This is pretty much, the truth is, the Sephardic world might not all go within this Ritva, right? But at least within the Ashkenazic world, this is the well-accepted opinion, the idea of Memtes Latuma, Memtes Latara, that there's possibilities of saying us, or possibilities of saying winter, right? It's our job to do the best that we can, right? And come to our honest-to-goodness conclusions, and we'll be right, even though, and what about the other person who comes to a different conclusion? He's also right. Right, and how could that be that the Torah is broad enough and the Torah is wide enough that these alternative opinions could actually fit in? Okay, and does that mean everybody's right? So I don't think that means everybody's right. So let's go back to our friend.
Isn't that reflected in all the Gemara that we learn? There are no opinions wrong. Some opinions are offered. This one says this. This one says this. The halacha is like however they decide.
So this Ritva would say what you just said, right? That the Noah's Ark. The truth is not completely. There is a Rashi in Suvis that points out that there's different types of machlokasim in the Gemara. Machlokas A is Rebbe him says this, Rebbe says that, and right. Another machlokas is they have machlokas about what Rav said. The machlokas about what right? So if you have a machlokas about what Rav said, so when it comes to the Torah, not when it comes to Rav, right? So there could be a right and there could be a right and a wrong, and look, it could be that there's a right and a wrong even within this. It doesn't mean that everybody's automatically right. It means that there's many different approaches, but some could be proven wrong. However, in the Sephardic world, certainly before Ritva, meaning Rambam. Like Rambam, that era, they don't agree. Griff, right? They would say no. They would say, and this is perhaps reflective in that the Riff only quotes the right opinions, and he doesn't go through the whole discussions in the Gemara, right? He says, the only thing you need to take out of the Gemara is the halakha itself, and everything else is worthless. In our world, in Ashkenazi land, we say, no, it's not worthless. It's all approaches, and they all help to fine-tune one another, and all of it is part of Torah. So that takes us back to our friend Howard Moskowitz. So what did Howard Moskowitz do with his layout, with his, right? So when generally what he was expecting to find is, you have from 8 to 12 in terms of percentage in sugar, and you dot, and you find the biggest blotch in the middle, right? It's going to be a graph. It's going to go up someplace in the middle like this. Right? That's what he expected to find. And whatever that is, that will be the percentage of asperity that you're going to get. What did he find, though, is that there were blotches. There was a group at 9, there was a group at 11.5, and there was a group at 10.
Genetic predispositions that takes the general.
Okay, so that's Dr. Horowitz, I should say, thinks that might be due to genetic dispositions, might be due to geographic dispositions, it might be due to nurturing dispositions, but whatever it is, different people have different dispositions. And what Howard Moskowitz realized is that in the famous words of Malcolm Gladwell, he is not looking for the best Pepsi. He's looking for the best Pepsis, right? That there are multiple possible ways in order to get this, in order to get this idea. And this idea hit him for a while. He kept trying to sell this idea that there could be multiple best tastes, and nobody picked them up on it until finally he got a call from the Campbell Soup Company in 1986. I mean, ask Barry if he knows about this. He got a call from Campbell's that they were in the spaghetti sauce business going up against Ragu with Prego. Now, I remember the Prego and Ragu commercials, right, where Prego was all thick and Ragu was not, and it was like, which one do you want better, right? I remember that, Sunday mornings watching TV forever, right? coming across these Prego and Ragu commercials. So he was behind the Prego commercial. What did he come up with regards to Prego? So Prego came to him and says, Prego is owned by Campbell's, right? And said, we want to get the best. We want to compete with Ragu in the tomato sauce market. So we ended up coming up with about 60 different possibilities, which is going to be more spicy, it's going to be more sweet, it's going to be big vegetables, it's going to be small vegetables, it's going to be garlicky, not garlicky, spicy, right? All of the different parameters came with about 60, right? He did a taste test. He did many taste tests, and he did many taste tests in different parts of the country, and he did many taste tests with people with different genetic dispositions also, right? And what he came up with was that there is an ideal type of regular tomato sauce, there is an ideal way of garlic tomato sauce in his ideal way of chunky tomato sauce. Chunky tomato sauce being the most exciting at the time. Why? Because at the point in the early 1980s, some of you may recall, there was no such thing as chunky tomato sauce. Right? There was only tomato sauce. Right? And that was what you bought. And it never came, because that's the way they made tomato sauce in Italy. And nobody had this thought, oh, maybe if we put some vegetables in it, people might like that better. So all of a sudden, what happened is that the supermarket shelves, that's why these supermarkets are so massive today, right? Because the supermarket shelves where they sold tomato sauce used to be about this wide with something called tomato sauce and maybe two or three brands. And then it became five times as wide because you needed all of the brands and all of the different combinations of flavors. This didn't just apply to tomato sauce. He also has a whole shtickle Torah here about mustard, right? About great papan mustard, right? That there's only one type of mustard originally, yellow mustard, right? And then from there, I don't eat mustard at all, but there was great papan, and then and there's spicy browns, and there's all these different types of mustard. So all that, all case, he probably dramatizes it a little bit to say this is all Howard Moskowitz is Kiddush. But whether it was or whether it wasn't, this
he
was.
Howard Moskowitz.
What?
He's in other books.
Too. He's in other books?
Oh, yeah. Because I've read that one, I've read
this?
Two others. But
oh, okay. All right.
That's so, what shows up in other books.
Okay. So he's probably dramatizing a little bit. But either way, so that was the chiddush that everybody could have. You're not looking for the best tomato sauce. You're looking for the best tomato sauces. You're not looking for the best mustard. You're looking for the best mustards. And you're not looking for the best pickle. You're looking for the best pickles. Right? That is his chiddush. That there are perhaps different approaches that people will come to, and they could be 100% completely right. Which brings us to a shiur that Rabbi Lam gave at an RCA convention, where he was talking about peace amongst people, etc. And that goes to the back of the page. He says, how is it possible for there to be multiple ideas? He says, this is an idea in quantum physics. Now, I don't quite understand this. The physics people among us probably will understand a little bit more, but I'm not sure. I think it's one of these things that no one is quite supposed to get. Right? That what is light? Is light a wave or is light a stream of particles?
Yes.
Both.
Yes.
Okay. Two apparently mutually exclusive properties on the basis of this principle. So Bohr also found philosophical applications for this daringly original principle. Albert Einstein much preferred the determinism of classical physics over the probabilistic new physics of Bohr. He and Bohr had good-natured arguments over the truth of this principle throughout their lives. One of those arguments, I'm sure, is photographed on the left side of the page in their machlokas. But what was Bohr trying to say? Right? Either that or they're talking about their grandkids. But what is he trying to say? How do you define light? So light could be defined in different ways depending on what your perspective would be. That it could act in different ways, and it could be defined in different ways, and you could argue about the different ways, and both sides can ultimately be right. There is two obvious examples in halacha that this exists. Would be one example. One is Bein Hashmashos. I took this out of the Encyclopedia Talmudis. What is Bein Hashmashos? So Bein Hashmashos is twilight, the period between day and night. So what is twilight? Is it day or is it night? Is it one or is the other? So this is just out of the encyclopedia. Bein Hashmashos hu suffik yom suffik laila v'shloshet tzadei suffikim. There's three ways of approaching it. Suffik kula. Maybe it's all day. Maybe it's all night. Suffik kula laila. Maybe there's aspects of both. Min ha-yom, min ha-layla. Uvechol mashu mibein ha-shmashos yeshli hishtapik shema mashu huzu kulo min ha-yom, kulo min ha-layla. In each instant of that period, you have to be concerned. Is this day, or is it night, or is it both? Right? And how do you figure it out? And there's no argue about it, but ultimately it is a machlokas. It is a machlokas that perhaps we're not able to dispute. If you want a homiletic reading on that, so I think Rav Meir Soloveitchik, when he spoke here in Kohelet a year or two ago on Hanukkah, so he developed the theme about being a shmashos and Hanukkah miracles, etc. And it's a good shir.
Does anybody hold it its own entity?
If you hold that it's both, I think. That's opinion number three.
When you get married, times when you get married.
Suffik yeshbo mishnehem. Times when you get married, right.
Right.
So this comes up many issues. This is why Shabbos is 25 hours long. This is why Tisha B'Av is 25 hours long. Right. This is why, right, that a bris could be... this is why it could be that a baby could be born on Bina Shmashos and have his bris a day later than a baby that is born the next day. How does that happen? Anybody?
Because you can't
even have Shabbos. Yeah, it could be even multiple days later, right? If he was born on the first day of a 3-day Yontif in Bina Shmashos, so he could be pushed off until 4 days later, right? 3 days later.
What do
you do? If it's born in Bina Shmashos, so are you allowed to do
Yontif? Well,
I'll say
you're not allowed to do it. If it was a question, you couldn't do it. You have to wait. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now there is a difference if he's born on the second. If he's born on the second day, I think he would do it on the second day, which is also an added level to the trivia question. But that's the Bina Shmashos issue. The same issue appears by an androgynous, right? Androgynous is a somebody who has both sexual characteristics of a male and female. So what is that person? Is that person male, female, both, or neither? Right. So all of those possibilities are presented, and they're all proven till the end. They're all, you know, very smart people took all of these approaches and dealt with all of the possible ways of trying to figure it out. So the Nitziv writes. So Nitziv has an interesting passage in Emek Sheilah towards the very end of Parshas Shlach, where the very end of Parshas Shlach is the last parak of Kriya Shema, right? What does it say in Parshas Kriya Shema? Right, Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavchem Vecharei Nechem. But it's not supposed to follow their hearts and their eyes. So the truth is, I left out the first three lines are not there. But he's quoting the Sifri, and the Sifri contrasts that pasuk with a pasuk that appears towards the very end of Kohelet, where there's a Tanakh on the top shelf there. Thank you. Perek Yud Aleph in Kohelet. Right, that rejoicing may in your childhood, let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Why? You will follow the ways of your heart, right? And the way your eyes lead you. And be aware that for all these things, God will call you to account. Right? What does that pasuk mean? That's right. Sure, you're young, right? You're free. You'll do whatever you want, right? But keep in mind that you'll have an accounting for all those things that you do. Right? That's what that pasuk says. So the Sifri says that this is contrasted with the pasuk of Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavchem Vecharei Nechem. You should not follow your heart. You should not follow your eyes. Right? So this is the Sifri. It's a contradiction. We have pasuk in Kohelet saying follow your heart, follow your eyes. We have pasuk in Kriya Shema saying that you shouldn't. Right? So what is the? So how does the? So the Sifri resolves it by saying, right, that I might have thought maybe you could do whatever you want based on the pasuk in Kohelet. Comes our pasuk to say no, you're not really allowed to do that. So the Nesiv says, what? if a 14-year-old got to actually the 11th parak of Kohelet, right, actually got up to this pasuk and says, "Oh, follow your heart's desire," right? You think that guy who just read the first 11 prakim of Kohelet is going to say, "Oh, I'm allowed to do whatever I want now, no matter what," right? It's like the year the Amish take off, right? Go do whatever I want, right? So it says in the Tzid, that can't be, right? It obviously meant to be included within your desires. So rather, what does he say? Ella kacha inyan, about five lines down. I know it's Rashi's script. I thought no. So it says Ella kacha inyan. The kasha lashon velo sasuru de mashmo milashon mitur aris. He says, what is lo sasuru? Right, the pasuk of lo sasuru. What does it mean lo sasuru? Right, you shouldn't. Tour, right? You say by the Mishpatim, by the Meraglim, Lasur Esa Eretz Kanan, right? They toured Eretz Kanan. They like wandered around Eretz Kanan, right? So what does it say? So Chipush Ha'inyan Chadash, right? Yosir Mahaya Iksiv Lo Telchu Acharei Levavchem. I would have said, don't follow, right? Don't go after your heart. What does it mean, Lo Sasur? Vayamashmo Yafezeminus, and I would be able to learn this. Shaliv Nimshach Acharav, right? Velama Nemar Velo Sasur, I say Velo Sasuru. Alze Yishev Ri, Ot Kavan Bas Harazu. I'm not sure what the Ri is, but this will answer another idea to this warning. Behainu, the Shlomo Amar Vahalach Bedarchi Libecha. Shlomo said, follow the ways of your heart. Right? Behistim Mefarish Kol Osa Mikra, Sameach Bachor, right? The whole pasuk is, right? You're going to be happy and joyful, the Shem Mitzvah, right? That's regarding to, with regards to Mitzvah. Vahachi Perish Mimidosh Kohelas, Vizehu Das, Rasul Umber Gemar, Shabbos Samach Gemar Beis, that's what he explains there. Perish Rashi, Sameach Betamudah, that you should learn with happiness and joy. And the pshat is, you should follow the way of your heart. Because the ways of serving Hashem is not the same by every person. This person bows himself in Torah and learns all day. And he separates himself to work. Right? And everybody, and the other one is involved with Chesed. And everybody is Hashem Shemayim. The gam b'Torah atzma ain kol derech limud shava. And even with Torah itself, not everybody learns the same way. The gam b'maisa ha-mitzvos. Right? Isa b'feir called Kisvei Avucha B'mai Zahir Tvei V'haya, right, Mar Zahir B'mitzvah Shabbos U'mar B'mitzvah Tzitzis, right? Everybody should do what they're careful in, right? One was more careful about Shabbos, one was more careful about Tzitzis, right? And that's what the Pasuk goes, Sasur Acharei Levechem, don't wander. But does it mean Lo Telech, don't follow your heart? So says the Mitzvah, that's not what it means. Lo Sasur means don't wander, don't go far out. But you should still go and follow your heart. People will have hearts that will lead them in all over the place. People will have different perspectives on how to perform mitzvahs, whether it's genetically disposed or geographically disposed or whatever is going to dispose them towards that, right? Says the Nitziv, right? It's all going to be appropriate. So yes, it's true that we have the idea of MS, we have an idea of Shalom, right? So, but if you put them together, it's not necessarily going to be one is right and the other one is wrong, but rather it's finding a medium between them, and not only finding the medium between them, but what will, but finding your medium between them, finding the way that will work. Work for each individual. For each individual, I would add in that that's only one part of this chapter on the ketchup. Right, the chapter that has this thing about the mustard, Pepsi, and pickles, whatever, is entitled the Ketchup Conundrum. Why is it called the Ketchup Conundrum if it's about mustard, Pepsi?
Same thing doesn't apply to ketchup.
Because it doesn't apply to ketchup. That's right. That the part of the chapter is about how one guy is trying to make a better ketchup than Heinz ketchup, and they're trying to go, why can't the guy make a better ketchup than Heinz? And at the very end, the chapter ends with them asking Harry Moskowitz, right, why is it that the ketchup guy isn't having any success coming up with a better ketchup? To which Harry Moskowitz responded, Moskowitz shrugged, I guess ketchup is ketchup. Right, that there are some things that there isn't negotiating on. There are some things that we have in Ikar Emuna that we have to follow. And just because we're going to say Eilu Ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, it only doesn't extend beyond Divrei Elokim. It's only contained within Divrei Elokim. So what to do about those perhaps that extend beyond Divrei Elokim? So that's the shiur on Sunday night. I'm hoping Sunday night works. I assume nobody's barbecuing this coming Sunday night. So hopefully we'll be able to have. It's on Sunday. Okay, so thank you for coming.